Hello and welcome to our CMD Bite Size series, where we explore a range of ministerial and theological issues. I'm Rebecca Evans, Ministry Development and Inclusion Officer for Truro Diocese. In this episode, I'll be talking to Laura Moffat, Director of Arts and Christianity, and Dr. Alice Kinghorn, who is working with the Church and Cathedrals Division of the Church of England. Together, we'll be exploring the subject of contested heritage. Hello, Alice and Laura, and thank you for joining me today. So let's get started, first of all, with some introductions. Laura, first of all, can you tell us who you are and your role with Arts and Christianity?
Hello, yes, thank you. I'm Director of Art and Christianity, and it's the UK's leading organisation in the field of art and faith. And one of the things that we do and have done now for over 30 years is to help churches and cathedrals in the UK to commission new art for their buildings. And independently of that and in a voluntary capacity, I've also been on the London DAC for over 15 years. And I think it's 10 years now that I've also been on the Church Buildings Council for the Church of England.
Excellent. So it sounds like you're very busy all of the time with those different things. Alice, your PhD is on the Church of England's involvement in transatlantic slavery through the work of missionaries. And as part of that, you led a pilot on contested heritage in the Diocese of Bristol. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Thank you for having me on here. So my PhD looked at how Anglican missionary societies work to delay emancipation in the British Caribbean. And I looked at how they worked, what kind of materials they were using. And crucially, I looked at who was funding the societies. I looked at donors and subscribers. And what I realised was that many of these were enslavers, or they were merchants or traders involved in the trade in some way. And a lot of these people were memorialised in churches, especially in the Bristol context where I was looking at. And so I wanted to do some more research into this. And I was also aware about the Church of England's its intentions to research its statues and memorials and contested heritage. I knew that they lacked the researchers and the resources. And so I sought some funding to try and piece the two together, basically. So I got some funding from the Uni of Bristol, and I worked with the diocese to look at contested heritage in 11 churches. So ran a pilot with 11 churches, essentially carrying out a kind of memorial audit with very little funding. And then at the end of that, I held a kind of information workshop where we were able to discuss the findings of the audit and consider next steps. So I think it's held as kind of a good example of how we can learn from the pilot for further audits and further research such as this.
Excellent. That sounds really interesting. And it must have been a very intensive piece of work for you as well, not just being a PhD, but also the emotions involved in the topic as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So in the spring of 2020, I'm sure many people will remember the murder of George Floyd by a police officer in the United States. And the public outcry which followed that, particularly the protests around the Black Lives Matter movement, included the toppling of the Colston statue into Bristol Harbour in June of the same year. And I think since then there's been perhaps a more widespread movement that brings under scrutiny who it is that at a basic level we memorialise and elevate. So would you be able to kind of, between you, tell me a little bit about what contested heritage is?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it is a term that's used that often we don't kind of realise what the definition of it is. But in the context of the church, from my understanding, contested heritage is historic objects that are symbols, or maybe symbols of pain or injustice, that impact worship in the church or other activities that are going on in the church. So this could be statues or memorial tablets or physical objects, but they could also be symbolic imagery. Historically, They could be memorials or dedications to people that were complicit in some of history's atrocities, for example, the trade in enslaved African people or the work of the East India Company, for example. But they are objects that their history and their provenance are contested, I would say.
Thank you. Laura, do you have anything to add to that from your perspective?
Yes, I mean, that's a really useful thing to hear from Alice there. But one of the things that I've been thinking about a bit I'm aware of in particularly in small parishes, is that, you know, very often the walls of our churches or cathedrals or the churchyards, they're full of names. And obviously unless we've already done a piece of historical research, we're not necessarily going to know who those individuals are and what their connections might be to something like the slave trade. So it does beg the question how proactive parishes can be, and obviously that's going to be that's going to be a demand on people's time and resources. But I think as Christians we're perhaps we should feel it is our duty do at least the minimum in terms of doing a bit of research about what it is that's around us. And sometimes it's just kind of looking afresh at the memorials, say, on your wall, and just trying to notice whether there might be something in the dates or the language used or whatever that might ring a kind of alarm bell, if you like.
Yeah, and I suppose also we become so used to, if you're going into a particular church maybe every week, kind of don't even notice those things as you go in. You just sort of, they're there because you see them every week and you don't even think about it. But actually it's about looking from a fresh pair of eyes to somebody coming in for the first time and how it might impact them if they saw something like that on the walls.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So there are some guidelines available on the Church of England website which raise some of the difficult ethical and theological questions. In particular, I guess, it can be difficult to hold in balance the context of the past. You know, in some circumstances where certain actions might not have seemed to be as wrong then as they are to us now, but holding that in balance against the inarguable abuses that we know were carried out against humanity. Sometimes empathising with things that happened so long ago can be difficult or not what people want to engage with, and I'm sure that's something in the midst of all the busyness of things that are going on in churches, whether there's space to do that. But sometimes the very presence of memorials can cause emotional harm to those who are faced with them. And as Christians and often custodians of buildings containing contested heritage, I think we have a duty to at least acknowledge the way in which power imbalances have led us into sin and explore options to address the cause of emotional harm through heritage. What would you say, from your experiences, are some of the key considerations for us in this context?
Well, it's a balancing act, and obviously, we have to do all that we can to carefully and objectively weigh up the harm that might be done by a piece of contested heritage to those that visit the church, and particularly to those who are worshipping in the church. That harm may be, as you've mentioned, it may be emotional. It may actually be more objective than that. Doesn't have to necessarily be just emotional, even though that's a strong reason for considering removal. But so weighing that up with the harm that to many can be seen to be done by removing historic fabric from churches, because these are places that, as you've mentioned, you know, are from a different time and context, and we have to hold in our minds the fact that, we are no better than those that went before us in many cases. And some might say, who are we to judge what went before us? So it's often very difficult. There won't be complete agreement that's almost, for certain in any of these cases. But I think what many people can reach an agreement on is that where the harm by removing historic fabric is seen to outweigh the harm seen to to derive from keeping it, we now have this phrase in our in common use at the moment, which is retain and explain. And so the idea there is to keep the historic fabric in place, but to explain it in some way. And one of the ways that I would like to advocate that can happen, that kind of explanation, is not simply through a bit of signage, which obviously, you know, might be very useful, but also through more creative ways. So art, commissioning new art, perhaps alongside or in the same building as a piece of historic contested heritage, could be a really, really good way of somehow redressing the potency of that piece of fabric. And I'm really pleased to say that just in the next month, we'll be seeing a piece of art that's exactly like that, that's been commissioned for Bristol Cathedral by Marcia Bennett Marlowe. And also just literally this week, I've been to visit another church where they're thinking of doing something very similar. There's no real question about them keeping the memorial that they have, but they want to do something about it.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. That's really helpful. And I think it is always that balance, isn't it? And having, and actually even just having the conversations is a helpful exploration with people. Alice, I'm sure that when you were in Bristol as well, you must have come across some of this right at first hand. Did you have any experience that you wanted to share?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what I found is that there's, as we said at the start, there's true value in knowing who is memorialised in your church and what the symbols mean, but also is understanding how and why these objects have come into being and understanding why they might be there in the first place, because often memorialisation through tablets, plaques, windows and statues, they could be a way to kind of elevate your status posthumously, and they're often paid for by family members, and so it's those that can afford to do so that would have these dedications made to them. And so the history, I suppose, that's told through memorialisation then is very different to the history that we might know now, where we're thinking about the horrendous abuses that were carried out potentially by some of these people that are memorialised. And so I think understanding the process of memorialisation and that history isn't linear in that way, and there's not kind of the book of history that is one objective story of what happened, is quite important to understanding the complexities of these issues. And I think that's definitely why proper, thorough, wide consultation is needed on any objects or type of contested heritage, because we all need to hear and be considerate about why the object causes harm. And I completely agree that I think something that is ultimately at the forefront of this is that worship is the first function of churches, and so if an object is challenging this and making the space not welcoming or not inclusive, then it should be addressed, whether that's through art and retain and explain or whether that's through removal.
So in many ways, contested heritage can be seen to be a specialised area, one which I'm sure many churches feel ill-equipped to deal with. Is the support available to churches facing these challenges, and what would you consider are the main barriers?
I think that in my experience, many churches are willing and keen to do the work when it comes to contested heritage, because they understand the pain that worshipping in spaces that might celebrate or memorialise those who are engaged in the wrongs of the past can bring. But I think that the support can be sporadic. And I just wanted to note here that this can particularly be the case when we think about the geographic spaces that the churches are in, because it's not the case that items of contested heritage will just be found in city churches, like in Bristol, for example. Rural churches will have these items too. For example, although enslavers and merchants lived in Bristol, and that's why there's lots of memorials in churches there, and they often moved out to the countryside too, and that's why many of the churches in the rural areas around Bristol are also likely to have historic objects that would now be seen as contested. And so I think that the balance in support and understanding kind of the resources that are available to churches that will be going through, you know, their own current context as well, is important to consider, because I think firstly, one of the main challenges can be resource and research, because many churches, they won't have the resources available to them to kind of do the research in the first place, especially an in-depth memorial audit. They'll be facing financial or time constraints of their own, and it also may be seen that in terms of the fabric of the building, there are more kind of pressing issues if there's some, you know, kind of emergency leak in the roof or whatnot. And research can also be time consuming, and when it comes, if you want to make a decision to installing a new piece of art, for example, or addressing the memorial in another way, the faculty system itself is obviously complex and can be very time consuming. So there are some of the challenges, I suppose, that are facing churches in terms of time and resources and also administration and support. And I think that in terms of addressing those and kind of how we can bypass them, I suppose, or work through them, is looking to examples of good practice. So Laura's mentioned a couple already. You don't have to reinvent the wheel here when you're looking at addressing items of contested heritage. The new contested heritage guidance, which is being released in autumn, will be accompanied by some case studies where you'll be able to see what has been done in different scenarios around the country in addressing contested heritage. That includes removal, loans to local museums, art installations, and the introduction of explanatory plaques as well. So I think that it is a challenging topic for churches, especially because it's something that they might not have the time or they feel like they might not have the expertise to dedicate to. But there is more support coming, and there is more support out there, I think is what my takeaway would be from that.
That's really helpful to know, and I think especially to see that obviously lots of the big cases, as you said, have been in big city churches, but actually to begin to see things happen in smaller rural churches can only be an encouragement and almost like a case study for other churches to take away from. So as you said, they're not reinventing the wheel, but they're beginning to see that things can be done, and they can kind of learn from the mistakes other people might have made or the learnings they've got from what they've done.
Absolutely.
Laura, did you have anything to come in on there with your...
Well, only that as part of that process, if a new artwork was something that a parish or a cathedral wanted to consider, then certainly we can help. You know, if you get in touch with Art and Christianity, there may be ways that we can help with finding a particular artist that, you know, somebody who's going to be able to respond to the challenge in the right way. We can help with things like creating an artist brief and basically the kind of process of commissioning a new artwork, which, you know, isn't an easy thing in itself, but when it's wrapped up with all the other work that you might be doing, it might also be a barrier to going that way. But we can certainly help with that.
Excellent. So is there any advice you'd offer to churches that are exploring issues of contested heritage at the moment? They might be just on the cusp of starting to look at something, or maybe a part way through the process. Any advice from either of you about what you would suggest?
I think in terms of, depending obviously on what stage they're at, proper wide consultation is needed, because we need to understand, particularly from the communities, who will be feeling the harm from this object the most. Consultation about what should happen to the object or further as well is needed in this. So I'd make sure that you're speaking to as many people as you can and taking their views into account too. In terms of research and exploring issues of contested heritage, one really useful resource, if you haven't come across it before, is UCL, University College London's database called Legacies of British Slavery. This is a website that anybody can use, and it lists all British enslavers and anybody that claimed compensation at the emancipation of slavery in the 1830s. UCL did a big project a few years ago, where that's now been digitised and all of that data is available online. And it also includes people that were involved in the trade or enslavers prior to this too. And so a good starting point can be typing in the name of whoever is memorialised in your church, putting it into the database and just seeing what comes up, because you'll be surprised about how many people are listed on that database. And so I think that that's a really good starting point if you're kind of just thinking about doing an audit, or you have a memorial on the wall that you think potentially could have some sort of contested heritage in the context of slavery, of course. And beyond that, I think that really some basic Google searching about who the person is can bring a lot more than you might think. So it really is, as we said at the start, about looking at it with a fresh new pair of eyes and considering who is being elevated in our churches.
Well, thank you. And bearing in mind you've been through this with a number of churches already, and they've probably come out the other side a little bit, are there any kind of takeaways that they've had that they weren't expecting from it, sort of more positive things? Obviously, it's positive to have moved forward and to have considered the past and kind of talked about it with people and explored it in a different way. But were there any things that came up that people weren't expecting?
I don't know if they weren't expecting it, but it has been the positive reaction from all communities. I think that people have been particularly, I don't know if the word is surprised, but I suppose pleased with, especially when it's been a piece of work that might have taken quite a long time and lots of consultation has gone into it, to see it come into fruition and really change the space of the church, I think has been a real positive outcome. I don't know if you have any more examples, Laura.
The one that I mentioned earlier at Bristol Cathedral, it was really good to hear Mandy Ford, their dean, talking about the process that they've been through. And this has been, I think since about 2019, actually, that they've started this kind of work. Late 2019. And that, you know, just hearing how much consultation has taken place, how much they have listened to all members of their community, and really, I think really also held an empathetic attitude, if you like. So, you know, that actually it's not quite enough just to hear people, but you do have to go a bit of a step further and really put yourselves in their shoes, perhaps. And that doesn't, you know, you can't do that overnight, and it's not just something you might do once even. I think there's something about, continuing to do that and to pray about it and to, you know, make it part of your, almost part of your being as a church. I found that very, very inspiring when I heard Mandy talking about that. And I think it'd be great to hear more about the cathedral and what they've been doing when this new artwork is unveiled on the 9th of October.
Excellent. That sounds really exciting. And I hope that goes really well. I think I really agree with what you say around how it becomes integral to the way we think. And actually, sometimes I think we often focus on, we'll make a decision and this will benefit these people. And actually, sometimes we don't spend the time thinking about who our decisions are going to disadvantage. And actually, engaging with a topic like contested heritage helps us to do that more authentically and to do it as part of our practice in all ways. So I think that can only be a positive for churches as well. So. I just wanted to say a huge thank you to you both for giving up your time this afternoon. You're clearly both experts in the area and have got a vast amount of experience of having worked with churches firsthand on the issue. So I hope that the conversation we've had this afternoon has been encouraging to people. It hasn't put them off and helped to demonstrate to them that actually there is support. And there is guidance out there to help people, and that these can be really positive conversations that can really help to move us forward as a church, and to think about the things that have gone wrong in the past and how we make things better for the future. So thank you both very much, and wish you all the best in all the work you're continuing to do.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast and you'd like to listen more, please do follow and share. Thank you for listening.